Yeah.
The imaginary figment of our imagination, we're supposed to believe it's something.
Well, I have some topics, but...
I bet you came back loaded.
Well, I did, and I do want to maybe say something about going to another country, but before I do, my daughter just sent me a link. One of my really favorite humanitarian musicians named Glenn Hansard, he just died, killed in a car crash or a bike crash. He speaking of exiting the Matrix, he made this movie called Once that won an Oscar, and it was about a busker who meets this woman in Ireland. He wrote all the songs, and it's like incredible movie. First of all, it's not a love story, which is amazing. And Steven Spielberg had said, like, it was one of the best movies he ever saw in his life. And he made it like for, I don't know, like $10,000 or something.
How old is this movie?
At least 20 years old.
Oh, wow.
It's called Once. I mean, they shot it, you know, like with handheld cameras, but I've seen it many times. The most famous song from it, Falling Slowly. He such a beautiful Irish heartfelt musician. And he got in a bike accident today. Man. So I'm kind of in shock. So, I was shocked when I got the message for sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, what I loved about him, just to say about not being in the Matrix, is that, like, he never played the game, and yet he managed, you know, your business is helping businesses that don't want to exist in the Matrix. And he's somebody who succeeded in making a life around his authentic self and never, you know... In some ways, I heard that his period of winning that Oscar and being famous, like, was the worst period of his life. Yeah. But so that's that. Glenn answered. boy, well, maybe I can ramble a little bit, because I do have these topics that I thought I could bring up, but I want to. All of a sudden, there's something else arising.
And go to it.
Thank you. Well. I went to Canada and, I live in San Francisco Bay Area, went to Canada, actually essentially to pick up a guitar that I bought 2 years ago, handmade. So I saw my brother. Yeah, I bought it before I started playing piano, and I already paid for it. I'm not practical. So
you are very patient though, obviously.
Yeah, well, it was a waiting thing, and then he took him 9 months to build it.
Wow.
And he built my first guitar in 1986. So going back to Canada was just this coming around, because I saw my brother. I saw all my musician friends from the past, two ex-girlfriends. I'm in the city that I grew up in. I lived in for 31 years, and you have memories of your past inside you, but then when they come to life, either by location or by people, and everybody is around the same age as me, I was just getting this reflection back to me constantly. And then also I'm having all these conversations with people that I just don't have in day-to-day life. You know, about what I'm doing or who I am. And there's a lot of really smart people in my life, and I put that in quotation marks, meaning people who are very observant, you know, I'd said awake and aware are different things, like people who've spent time, they've gone to university, whatever, they studied things, they're really smart. But it was... only when I got home, I kind of realized that the stream I'm in energetically is so different. So while I did well, usually when I'm out in the Matrix, I get tired. but I went through the whole week riding the subways, walking the city, talking about things with people, getting all this mirroring back. And I was fine. And then I got home and I could kind of see that I'm not in a world of the mind. I'm not in the world of analyzing and dissecting, although many people think I would. I mean, you can listen to me right now. I'm talking about something. Sounds like I'm analyzing and dissecting. But I think that the difference between living in your heart and living in the soul is, yeah, the mind's busy. It can be doing things, but it's in service to something greater. So what the mind says to me is most of the time the truth, like, or truth as far as I can tell, or the truth according to where I am developmentally. But I'm not somebody who's using the mind to figure things out. So I'm not really stressed out that way. I used to be coming from that kind of background. So I just noticed that people are grappling with things, but everybody's figuring it out, or figuring stuff out. And that is tiring, because I think people use the mind because they don't have trust or faith, and they're using that to control something. And actually, one of the topics I wanted to bring up today came out of a session yesterday, is the difference between having control and being peaceful. Meaning, sometimes people who get control of things look like they're peaceful because they have everything the way they think they want it. But real peace isn't a matter of control either, which is done through the mind, because your mind makes decisions and you follow them. And so we should all, you know, navigate to the most stable life we can. But what I notice is that people use the mind to avoid pain, to avoid feeling, to avoid risk, to avoid touching the things of the past. So I could see how, and it sounds like it's not really a judgment, it's just that I can see that there was a lot of tension in people that they were unaware of. And I found myself being my younger self kind of in tension with people, because I'm going back to my past and I'm acting like the person that they think I am, and I'm acting like I did in the past, and I can feel how wrong it is for me to live that life. And there really isn't any conversation I can kind of have about that, because while I was talking to some people about really intense things, people are not that curious or interested to know what I know. And I'm not like advertising it. I could just sort of witness that part of my life just remains unseen in so many circumstances, because I have all these things I can do, all these things I understand, but most people aren't interested in it. Even there was many conversations about Tai Chi and martial arts, and even like, maybe will you show it to me or whatever, but it never happened. And what people are like, oh, I took a class at the JCC, at the Y or whatever, but they're not, it's just not, it's not where I am. So I kind of came back realizing that there was some exhaustion from, oh, here's the other fascinating part. Canada, partly maybe because I live in America, but my Canadian friends are obsessed with politics, obsessed with it. Like, everybody's talking about it. I mean, nobody has anything positive to say about what they think is going on in America. And maybe they're talking to me because I live here, but I had this interesting conversation with my brother, because he does sort of read up on things, and I would think he would be one of those people. But it was a whole thing about me getting back over the border, and people were sending me articles and talking about how I might get, like, you know, stopped and thrown in an ICE van or something. And because I did come to the United States in less than above board manner back in the 90s, and you know,
yet a magical story that should probably be told.
Yeah. Yes, it. Well, the bigger part of the story was more that not the coming over here, but at one point going back and getting caught at the border and in, you know, waylaid in a room for 8 hours with them, you know, going through my luggage and all this kind of stuff. But, and then telling me I can't ever come back to the United States, but I already lived there. So once I got back over the border, I wasn't able to leave. But it, suffice to say, you know, my brother said, you know, there is all these people that get trouble. They have some part in it, which is surprising. My brother said that. And I do have the belief that when you invoke the matrix in a way, like, You, if you poke the bear, well, there's a saying in India, like, if you don't want the monkeys at the zoo to bother you, don't look at them. So there's something about how people were doing things. And I just kind of pulled my energy and reminded myself that I'm not here to fight that fight and that I got no axe to grind and I don't want to call any attention to myself that would be, you know, confrontational. And of course, so I got to the airport 3 hours early and I was through security in 10 minutes with nothing to do. But what I noticed was my brother said to me, oh, everybody's paranoid here. And I think because historically, karmically, you know, when there was the British had everything, controlled everything, and then people wanted to separate from that. And they created independence. That was America. And if they didn't, and they remained colony of Britain, that's Canada. So Canada has this cultural karma of being the polite society. It's a real thing. You feel it in the atmosphere that people are more pulled in and conservative, and they're just not, they're not freewheeling, gun-toting cowboys and Indians. It just doesn't exist there. So they've always... Most Canadians look to America as a certain way, and now they're looking and they're going, as the younger sibling, like, am I going to be okay? Mm-hmm. And I just couldn't get out of that conversation because it was everywhere. I brought some bottles of California wine, just as a gift to like some people, like, cause, and some local wine. So I, and then I forgot one of the bottles, like me, and I... had to go get another one because I had already told this person I brought it. So I went to the liquor store, which is the only place you can buy wine in Toronto, and the huge superstore of wine, and there's no American wine. And they've banned all American products because they're mad because the tariffs, and they're just like the little brother standing up. And like, I go to the woman and I ask her, and she's like, fuck America, like, you know, just, you know, the whole thing. So I had to buy the first bottle I could see that didn't look like it came from or somewhere else, so that I could give that as a gift, as a, and it was from Argentina that I gave you local California wine. But everywhere I was turning, people were talking about it. And I think it does speak to, and maybe this is the last thing I'll say about this, because maybe you got some things you want to say. Like, part of, I think, our work together, you and I, is to talk about what our own personal responsibility, like, what is our capacity to create the life that we're meant to live, which... When you start to do that, you have to separate out from the external energies in order to understand A, what your own design is, but B, like, how does it want to happen if you remove conditioning and trauma? But at the same time, the world out there isn't inert, and there is a lot going on. And I think when one travels, and I don't travel much anymore, like the going over the borders and stuff, you feel the differences in the atmosphere and the currents. And there's no question that there is this very powerful, untethered energy in the air everywhere that is about where the shift that the world is going through is going. And on one hand, like, it has nothing to do with what I have to do. On the other hand, I'm in it and we're all in it. And you can't just say, I'm going to completely ignore this, because I mean, if I did get stopped and thrown into a detention center, that's a real thing. And I'd have to deal with that. So,
and we would have just had 10 minutes of silence because there would have been no one to speak. And this podcast would get really dull. Yeah. So
yeah,
I'm glad you figured that out.
I have been told that people think you're really funny. I mean, no, nobody said I'm really funny, but so you, I think you'd be fine. You would continue it on my behalf as a tribute to me until they found me. I know you would not be the guy looking for me.
I would send someone. Yes.
You would send, you put one of your best people on it.
Yes, I would. Yeah. I would. My daughter said something interesting the other day. She's 18. She's one of those wiser people that you're like, man, if I had been in that place to be able to say something like that at my age, maybe my experience would have been quite different. But somebody was talking about some sort of rule or regulation or deadline or something. And she just said, well, it's only as serious as you believe it is.
And that's so good.
I think in terms of our interactions with the Matrix, it does respond to your consent in often magical and unpredictable ways. Not that you can mold it, but you can certainly, as you move through it, affect how it relates to you and how attached you seem to be to it, and vice versa. Like I remember during the pandemic, Marin had to travel with some of the kids somewhere. I don't even remember where, but it was like 3 flights. And we were not going to cover our faces because we appreciate oxygen. And so she just decided like, this isn't going to be an issue. And so she just walked through the airport, nothing over her face, went through 3 flights, no problems. No one even mentioned it. Not until the last one where they were sitting in the back row, you know, where the flight attendant usually sits, like way at the back of the plane.
Right, right.
And they were just landing and the woman looks over at her and says, oh, I didn't even realize you weren't wearing a mask. Isn't that funny? And so there's something going on there. And, you know, I feel like the people that are in the Matrix, as I was, I mean, like, energetically, I mean, like you're buying into this is the world.
Yeah.
The energy flows, you know, from that thought form to them and they react to it. And like you were describing, like their mind is like their primary device to like sort through and figure out how to navigate and what do they have to do so they don't get in trouble. And like, and then when you get on this journey to reclaim your own authority, that whole current direction switches.
Yeah.
And you become the source, right? And everything flows out to you. And while, yes, you can't change the way the Matrix works, your consent to be bound by it has real physical reflections that you can notice.
Well, this is so good. There's a lot here. For one, the consent, the vortex of energy that comes from conditioning and trauma, and even your DNA, if your DNA is some kind of karma or consciousness, meaning memory that you're carrying, maybe trauma from other lifetimes, like it's such a powerful spiral of vortex to pull you in, and not giving consent to it is so difficult at the beginning, because it feels like life or death, that if you say no to it, like your daughter hasn't had the same life that you have. So she doesn't know.
They never bought in. So they kind of view it as this weird beast that like is around, but is largely something you laugh at.
Right. And that's the gift that you hopefully, you know, that's the gift that you gave them as part of your karma. Your job this lifetime is to is provide her the opportunity not to have to do that. But you and I come from another time, another place where the because you tried to win the race that you to follow the parade, as it said in that Dylan quote in the New York Times. But you followed the parade, and so did I. And I think that the beginning of the change is the moment, and I think it's true forever in your life, is when you feel the risk, and you the risk of not consenting to it, because you feel the part of you that's pulled to give it power, to give power to things. This is something I noticed, is that people in my trip, people complain and people speak negatively without knowing it. That's a form of consent, because you're saying, I don't accept this in some way, like I don't allow what's happening, and I'm worried about.
Well, you're demonstrating that your attachment to it by even talking about it.
Right. But if you have the feeling of it in you of being pulled to consent, but you don't talk about it, it's not that much different, because you still could be under the influence of it. So whether you say something or not, it's that the moment of transformation is in recognizing and accepting that you have this experience of feeling like energy is pulling you to do something, and then you risk not doing it. And then once you do it once and you realize, oh, like this is a mirage, this is a dream, this consent I've given, this fear I have, this authority that I've passed out, like whatever threat I thought I was going to be under, nothing materialized. It does begin the journey of feeling more certain that you can keep doing that.
So, yeah, I think we've kind of all been brainwashed into believing that flavor that we call risk, like that is actually what power feels like. And I was never trained in developing my capacity to hold that.
Me either.
Right? So like we had to figure that out on our own. And that's a freaky journey to take. And I didn't understand it cerebrally. I certainly had never felt it. And the years that I was studying with this shaman, she always was like, you're so afraid of your power. And like my head could not get around. Like that makes no sense to me.
Well, I think that the thing that we share and why we end up being guides for other people, I'm not saying we, who knows if we're helping, but you know, regardless,
we know that
whatever expertise we might have or whatever we want to share, you and I both came to some realization or action or process on our own. It's not to say you had a shaman, doesn't mean I haven't had teachers, but we both did figure this out without any accreditation from the external world. And I think that when you're, if I had one credential for guiding people, it's that I did the work that you have to do, and I understand it, because nobody made it safe, or nobody even told me what was going on or what I needed to do. I had to figure that out myself. And I think it's the same for you. And I think that gives us a lot of certainty that even if we're not popular or we don't have a license, we still know that we know something that's valuable that we want to share with other people. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and I would probably describe the thing that happens, or the thing that happened for me, was that I somehow saw through the implied agreement that we're all raised with, that if you do what you're told, you're going to be all right.
Yeah.
Like you're going to be safe, right? Nobody's going to really bother you. And
I wasn't told that. That was not what happened to me. So just
I mean, societally, like that's kind of like the social.
I think the difference between us is that you figured
it.
I knew that I couldn't do that from the beginning. And it's not because I didn't. The difference in you and me is I tried and failed, so I never felt like I was going to ever get any reward for any of it.
I succeeded and failed. So
what's that?
I succeeded and failed.
Yes, and I exactly.
Yeah.
You actually became the valedictorian, but I failed high school. I failed high school math 3 times. I mean, I failed music.
Like, that's impressive though. I mean, that takes some dedication for real to your own voice, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That Where's that guy now anyway, Mr. Steinberg? Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, it was a multi-year process of understanding what it felt like to hold power. And the more often I did it and didn't die, that meant something.
That's exactly what I was saying. Like, as soon as you start to do it, by degrees, your awareness wakes up and your willingness to risk what's needed to be in your autonomy and authority, it goes up. I have a little saying that, I mean, I'm not sure if I got this from George, but I'll just give it to George, but I'll just explain in my own way. George, my Tai Chi teacher, and he would say, because he's in internal martial arts is not about like karate where it's you're punching or something or taekwondo. Internal martial arts is about mastering the internal energies. So he would say, when you first start, you know, I can't put in his words, I'm going to put in my words. At the beginning, the outside goes first and the inside follows, meaning you take the action and then energy happens as a reaction. And then when you start, and I'll just say this about martial arts, but I'm talking about one's ability to create their life. Then you realize the inside and the outside move together. So if I'm confronting the consent, I have a part of me inside that's saying I'm not going to consent to this, and then they're sort of moving together. My action and my thoughts are together, and the reason why in these first two things it's so hard is because the force of external energy, which you don't know to be part of your own consciousness, you see it outside of yourself, has a power over you. So you're fighting against the feeling that you have to give your power to it. But then,
and decades or lifetimes of momentum.
Yes, yes. I mean, I'm giving this little philosophy, but it's like it's such an intense thing. But the third thing is when the inside go first and the outside goes second. And that's when you realize, when you separate and you start to master your own energy, then you begin to move 100% from the inside to the outside. So your energies, your action, your outside only happens according to your inside. It doesn't happen according to the outside. And the revelation is that you create your own reality, because when you start to change from outside first to inside first, when you get to inside first, you realize that you have a lot of power over the outside by the way you are on the inside. Just like your daughter sitting, she's decided not to get stopped for not wearing a mask. And I've had this experience over and over again, and I don't know hardly any people who really do this or understand this, but I feel like this is the superpower, is that I will look at something that seems threatening on the outside, but I can change the magnetism by seeing it as part of my own energies. And by changing my own energies, I can change the outside. Not always, because a rock can crush a flower. So if somebody is let's say someone's very violent and you're walking down the street, you might not stop them from mugging you or something. But there is something, And I've had this many times. I don't know if you, I'm sure you've had this too, like your daughter, where because I'm in the energy of the inside first, I don't see the outside as being separate from me or against me the way I did before. I see it as some part of me that I'm here to work with.
Yeah. And I would say that when you're able to do that, paths to navigate along appear that you could have never conceived of for some reason. And then you just follow them and you achieve these outcomes that don't make sense given the facts on the table, which I believe is why the Matrix so tries to entrain consciousness on how to do things.
Mm-hmm.
Because that creates its own obstacle to getting things done. And if you can let that go entirely, meaning all you know is the energy of the thing achieved. I mean, people call this prayer, magic, whatever, but I've proven it to myself enough that we have some ability to do this. The how is not the issue. And we always think the how is the issue. How am I going to move? How am I going to sell this house?
Decision making.
But that's giving your power away.
That's right? The and mind. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I hear two opposite things here. Not opposite, two different approaches. I think you're talking about, in a way, merging with the outcome, so to speak, by putting your energy where.
Well, merging with the outcome only so I can change my energy.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. That's the only reason.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's obviously it's valid, but what I'm saying is, if you don't have an outcome, let's just say, or that's not what you're focused on, you know what it is? There is the journey and there's the destination. There's the goal and the process. So one way I think you're talking about it is that you're talking about the goal, like if you know, to put yourself in it so that you can change, you can align your energy towards the truth and eliminate anything that isn't part of that within you. And I'm saying, if you master the process of knowing your own energies and how they work, then you can go out into the matrix and practice being the master of those energies in relationship to whatever you encounter.
Yeah.
Understanding that whatever you encounter is both within you and also outside of you.
Like if you've seen The Matrix, they kind of tell you everything.
You mean the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw the first one a long time ago. I remember I was just stunned.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of amazing. And yet they teach you none of it, right? Because that's not what school teaches you. That's not what religion teaches you.
It's if they were teaching that, there wouldn't be school. Like the purpose of school is not to teach you. It's to condition you, right?
Yeah.
So if you went to a school where they were teaching you in the first thing in grade one, they showed you the movie, The Matrix, like there would be no purpose for school.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll live.
Yeah. Well, as you like to say, I came here 1,000 years too early. All right. We done?
Yeah.
That was spirited. And
I think we wish everyone well on their journey to reclaim their power and, to endure whatever uncomfortableness that might generate, it's worth it.
Yes. And reach out if you need our help.
Cool. See you next time.
Got me working, boss man. Working round the clock. I want me a drink of water, but you won't let Elijah stop. Big boss man. So rest easy at night, big boss man.